Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Casterbridge podcast with a K. Joining me are James McLean.
Hello.
And Brian Terranova. That sound you hear is possibly a clue to some of you as to what we'll be discussing this week. It's Doctor Who video games. At some point, the BBC Worldwide will be releasing Doctor Who The Eternity Clock, the most advanced Doctor Who video game yet. Doctor Who video games have been with us since 1983. That's 29 years. And to date, none of them have set the world alight. Shall we say. So, before we get on to the Eternity Clock, we've got an interview with Simon Harris, who's the BBC Worldwide guy who's in charge of the project. Before we get on to that, James, Doctor Who video games, you played a few?
I've played a few in my time. They were my sort of fix of, as a child especially, to try and get into Doctor Who, because there was no real toys, were there, anything?
And so not in the 80s, no.
We always hoped that there would be some way on the video screen, and there wasn't that many really.
Did you have any favorite? Was there one that you played particularly a lot?
I remember actually being about 10 and 11 and getting engrossed in one that was out in about 1984 called, it wasn't actually licensed, it was called Dr. Watt. And it was sort of walk around Jet Set Willy-ish, if people remember Spectrum and Commodore games, these sort of 8-bit gen. It wasn't very good, but it did have aspects of Doctor Who in it. And there was a sort of, you had to sort of find things to put with other things. It was that sort of game. So it's had a bit of a Doctor Who feel to it. Okay. I like that. And
And what about the official games?
I played Dalek Attack. I remember that coming out because we were bereft of Doctor Who at that point. There was no life.
Was it about 92, was it?
It was about that, wasn't it? It was, I had it on the Amiga. Mega 500, and again, it had the aspects of Doctor Who in there, which all the Doctor Who games managed to do. They always tended to have, you know, the Daleks and copious amounts of villains, but it obviously lacked anything that really felt like Doctor Who. Not wanting to tread on the toes of the new one, since I haven't played it yet, there's a tendency for Doctor Who games to tend to be a little too much of the run and shoot things. Which never quite fits with Doctor Who.
We'll come back to the whole adventure game genre in detail later on, I suspect. But the early games were graphic and text adventures, weren't they? The first two or three.
There was one on the Amstrad, wasn't there?
Now that was one of those game genres that just completely died out.
Yeah.
I was sad about that. I enjoyed playing that type of game. Now, over the years, in my opinion, you may disagree with me, James, and our listener may also, Doctor Who games tended to get better, or have tended to get better in one way or another over the years. That isn't to say that any sort of ultimate point of wonderment has ever been fulfilled. There's no utopic Doctor Who game as yet. Were you owner of Destiny of the Doctors?
I played it. My friend had it, and I had a copious amount of goes on it. I think I actually might have borrowed it for a bit as well. So yeah, I did play it.
Okay. Did you manage to complete it?
No, I didn't. I found it fairly hard because I was slightly young and I was often drunk, and the interface of the character you were playing was like being drunk.
Was it Grag,
wasn't it, who used to bump into walls was doing in real life, and the mixture of the two made for a difficult gameplay. But it wasn't a bad, it was a game which reflected the time, in the sense that, you know, the games were going more into 3D, especially on the PC.
It was a first-person shooter, effectively, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And it reflected that. And I think the problem is, I mean, you say they get better. I would say they've remained fairly relative. I would often rate them generally at sort of likes of 65-75% out of 100, maybe 60 to 70. Nothing absolutely terrible like you get with some licenses, but nothing that really blows your mind. And every time they move a step up onto a new gen, you sort of get that same feel. You get new stuff, right, as you say, like voices or actors and better graphics, but they never really seem to capture the potential.
I think Destiny of the Doctors, though, although, as you say, it was tough to play. I believe people have completed it, but I don't know what their mental state was afterwards.
There is a YouTube video that goes all the way through.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so
that must be quite a long video.
Yeah, it's about 12 videos, I think.
I was going to say it's about 12 hours long. Then.
I'm sure Brian will join me in my experience of this, but you can actually go back to a lot of games that have been made over the last 30 years and watch them being completed on YouTube. Like for several hours worth of video footage, which for someone like me who played a lot of video games as a kid since, you know, the very early 80s, it's kind of nice to be able to go back and see the endings of these games that you were just never able to complete. Destiny of the Doctors, I never completed. Okay. It was Anthony Ainley's last appearance.
What I was coming up to. Those two brilliant things about it. Beyond the game, there's the whole encyclopedia element of it on the disc.
Yeah.
And there was the appearances by Anthony Ainley, which were absolutely made the game for me. If any player was playing it and they were getting a bit fed up with the difficulty level, there was always the prospect of seeing Anthony Ainley in his most outrageous appearance as the Master yet, probably.
It is. He has a line which he mimics off Delgado in The Time Monster, where he's talking about all the Doctors. And he sort of says about the first one, the original, the amazing original, but oh, what a bore he was. There's some lovely little bits for Ainley, and he does a lovely laugh track on there, which goes for about 15 seconds where he has to continue laughing.
Yeah.
And it's bizarre, it's funny, and it's great, it's wonderful. And he's enjoying himself by the looks of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he looks like he certainly is, yeah. And the other thing is they've got some decent special effects around him as well, which feels good. Okay, so for years we didn't have a Doctor Who game at all. And then with the new series coming around back in 2009, or was it 2010? Gosh. 2010, the BBC Worldwide and Sumo Digital got together with the adventure games. Did you play any of the adventure games?
No, I didn't. Because at the time, as I said before, I was in part working on the ones that were released, the official ones that were released through the Wii and the DS.
Yeah, yeah.
And sort of by that point, I was a bit tired of the thought of playing Doctor Who video games.
They came out around the same time.
They came out around the same time, and they looked very good. I suppose I was a little jealous I didn't get to work on those as well, so I didn't, you know, it was a bit of envy, but yeah, they looked very impressive, especially for web-based games.
Yeah, the design of the games was good. Back when the games were first launched, I got to go to Sumo Digital Studio in the what was the industrial area out between Sheffield and Rotherham on there. And so I've got to see a lot of the designs that they'd done and what they hadn't used. Mm-hmm. So the first game that came out was the Dalek game, and that was heralded by lots of Daleks at Sheffield Station. The second game was the one with the Cybermen in. There's lots of beautiful designs of Cybermen in various states of decay, you know, partially cybernized humans. And it looked absolutely marvelous, and it was a bit of a shame that the game itself ended up with a Cyberman helmet and a boiler suit, which I think was for child-friendly purposes. But what they had designed besides that was amazing. I think the first two are really good, possibly the third one as well. I think the latter two fall down with just not imperfect plots that aren't entirely suitable for the game engine.
Right.
The first three are pretty similar. In that there's a lot of pointing and clicking and running around and solving problems.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much in the way of shooting. In fact, there's no shooting at all unless it's coming from, you know, a Dalek or a Cyberman.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of problem solving going on. And that's absolutely marvellous for a free game. The quality of the game production for a free title is brilliant. I know overseas Doctor Who fans would have had to pay using the direct-to-drive service. But again, I don't think it was an awful lot of money that they would have paid. But those were good games, I felt. I was going to ask you how you felt about the Nintendo games in terms of playing them.
Well, believe it or not, I never actually played them in the end. I was involved.
Right.
I was involved very early on in post-production, pre-production, sorry. And at the point when I was involved, Matt Smith had been cast, but there'd been no footage about or any idea really what he was going to be like.
Right.
I know the designer went to the BBC, and I had a lot of meetings with the BBC, and she said it was fantastic, you know, office any Doctor Who fans, sort of meeting room that would be jealous of. It was full of memorabilia and stuff.
Yeah.
And the BBC obviously takes Doctor Who very seriously. I wonder sometimes if the BBC is a sort of franchise which is very, while the games are never fantastically good, I get the impression the BBC is always very, very, I don't want to say opinionated, but they have very specific ideas what they want in a game. And maybe sometimes what they want isn't quite what games are about. And okay. I wonder whether with the web games, maybe because it was done more internally, through BBC Cardiff, as I recall. I could be wrong. It was sorted through them rather than BBC outsourcing directly to companies to build. Maybe they had a little more freedom to do what they want. But I get the impression BBC always likes to make sure that they have a hands-on. And with those games, I think one of the mistakes that people don't quite ever understood, I always got the impression Nintendo Magazine never understood, was that those games weren't aimed at 20 to 30 year olds. The BBC was very specific that they wanted something for kids.
Yeah.
So they were very simple. A lot of click pointing sonic wands at the television and running around solving a few problems. And as far as I was aware, the original demographics who tried it enjoyed it. So.
But are we not in danger of deriding the whole point and click genre, which is pretty much the successor of the text-based adventure, isn't
it? Yes.
There's been some absolutely marvelous point and click games over the years.
Yeah.
There's Secret Monkey Island.
Yes, absolutely.
There's the Indiana Jones game.
Yeah.
And many, many others. And they've got very deep and engaging and immersive storylines. Whereas it could be said that these particular point and click examples that we talk about don't have that.
Exactly. I don't. It's a funny. I wonder whether Doctor Who is such a wide, expansive medium that it's very hard to develop for in some respects. Especially as I say, I think the BBC has always got very specific ideas of what video games should be about, and maybe.
I think it's probably more along those lines because the Star Wars is you know, it's bigger than Doctor Who.
Yeah.
In terms of depth and expansiveness and, you know, their various continuities. And they managed to do. You know, there's always new Star Wars games.
What always surprised me with Doctor Who and video games was that really when you're doing an adaptation of anything, be it a toy, be it a video game, one of the things you're trying to do is capture the things which people want to do in that concept. And it always, like with the Lucasfilm caught onto this very quickly in the 90s with the X-Wing and TIE Fighter. And when the actual engines got stronger, they've done some very fantastic Jedi stuff and fighting stuff. And more recently, as you know yourself, Christian, they've done a very big MMO thing with the Jedi and all that. And they found what people really want. I've never been quite sure the BBC have ever been quite sure what the Doctor Who fans want out of a game. And I personally think there's been an overemphasis on the sonic screwdriver.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that because obviously we've got a new generation of Doctor Who fans and the sonic screwdriver is obviously a lot more important to them. But I've been surprised in virtually all the games we've seen, bar one of the BBC online download ones, have had very little to do with the TARDIS. Destiny of the Doctors did. It was all very much set in the TARDIS, but it wasn't in the way that people like the TARDIS. It was just an environment to explore. And I've always thought that they've all missed that out. I mean, even Dalek Attack, where he went to different time zones, you never saw the TARDIS past the opening intro, and then it was gone. And you think that's the sort of thing you should be simulating, is the ability to be like the Doctor, to fly your TARDIS where you want, or to certain destinations. And even if it's at the beginning and the end of each level or something, but it was always ignored, and that really surprised me. Or regenerations, even. You know, you've got seven lives as a character.
Yeah, yeah.
But you never see them regenerate from one. I mean, obviously, maybe there's likeness issues and stuff, but you maybe not even have to have likenesses. You could use just a Time Lord, and who regenerates. And these are very simple concepts, which I'm surprised none of the video games, especially more recently. But then again, I think when you get more recently, again, the BBC has a very strong hold over them, and they're very specific mandates of what can and can't be used. I mean, the last ones on the Wii, on the DS, on the online ones, and even this, the more recent one that's coming out, obviously, for the PS3 and the PC and the like, it's all Matt Smith.
Yeah.
There is no reference to any other doctors. And that's obviously a very key agenda, to whether it's for licensing or whatever, to keep it very fixed in now. Mm-hmm. And so again, on a world of regenerations of Time Lords and such expanse, it automatically locks into
it's very narrow, isn't it? Yeah.
Into a narrow path, which is unfortunate.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do now. We've got the Eternity Clock coming out in March. So a few weeks ago, the Eternity Clock had its press launch, and Casterbury's news bot Mez Burdett was fortunate enough to be able to attend. He got the chance to play the game, and he also interviewed the game's executive producer, Simon Harris.
So obviously we talked earlier on, I asked you quite a few questions while you're trying to set up, which is quite rude of me. So I guess just, again, just for the sake of what I'm going to relate to everyone, just run through quickly with me, the plot, if you can, of the Eternity Clock.
Yeah, sure. So without giving away too many details, because obviously part of the fun of this being like an interactive episode is watching the Doctor and River puzzle it all out. I mean, the fundamental thing is it opens with the Doctor in the TARDIS on his own. And suddenly the TARDIS is pulled into this time maelstrom. Everything's going mad. The TARDIS is fighting for control, crashes on Earth, realizes that there's this massive time maelstrom which is pulling holes in time, and it's encompassing the whole of the Earth. So he then does what the Doctor does. He walks out the door of the TARDIS to find out what's going on, and that's where the game starts. This story is about the Doctor and River, because the TARDIS basically phones River, so she's in Stormcage, as we know she is at certain times in her time period, and she breaks out of Stormcage, so the player gets to do that with River, and then joins up with the Doctor to help him and find out what's going on. And this story is very much about River and the Doctor piecing together what is causing this problem with time, and then how they reset it, because the Doctor very quickly works out, well, hold on, it's London in the present day, the Cybermen haven't invaded, they haven't been converting people, the Daleks haven't devastated Earth in the future, in the Victorian times, the Silurians didn't poison the entire world, so both A, what is giving them the power and the motivation to do that, and B, how do we stop it and reset the time streams correctly. And then I'll give one big hint, which is the Eternity Clock is actually way, way more powerful than they originally anticipate, and that actually we find out that the Eternity Clock is rewriting chunks of time. There's a great cutscene where River realises that actually entries in her diary have changed, and she doesn't remember writing them, and that's how badly that this thing is playing with time. So As we've said in some of the press releases, this is planned as the first, it's itself controlled story, but it's part of a longer arc that we hope to build out. So by the end of this, they've got some ideas, but there's a much bigger thing afoot. So
so we've got a big overarching plot.
Big overarching plot, yeah. So okay. there's a good cliffhanger.
And with what we're talking about in terms of progressing the game forward for the future years and everything, is that based on how well the Eternity Clock does?
Fundamentally, you know, whenever you do something creative like this, you've got to give it to the fans, and you know, we've got to be judged, so people are going to review it and people are going to choose to buy it or not. So, you know, if we're on the we're very, very happy, we feel we're hitting a higher quality level than we've ever hit with a Doctor Who release before, both in terms of technology and just the way it feels like a real Doctor Who episode, and the way that the gameplay is integrated into that. But we now have to finish it up, release it, and then we will be judged on that. And hopefully we've got really, really big plans, and hopefully if people agree with us and this is successful, then we'll get to realise those.
Okay. In terms of plans, I know you won't be able to tell me anything at all, and that's fine. But what we've got next year is 2013, which is obviously 50 years of Doctor Who on television.
Yep.
So in terms of that, there's going to be a lot of celebrations on screen, a lot of celebrations off screen. So are you planning to, if everything goes to plan, planning to kind of inaugurate the celebration to a game?
So I think there's a couple of things there just on a wider scope. So the first thing is obviously we do have our browser-based MMO, Doctor Who Worlds in Time. So I'm sure that we will be doing specific stuff around the 50th anniversary. It's too big of an event in the Doctor Who world. As to how, I will say that we do have plans around Eternity Clock that would tie into the 50 years of Doctor Who. I'm sure that we will be doing specific stuff around the 50th anniversary. It's too big of an event in the Doctor Who world. As to how, I will say that we do have plans around Eternity Clock that would tie into the 50 years of Doctor Who. I think one of the opportunities you have in gaming is to do things that are challenging to do in a TV environment, and so that's why we work very closely with the team down in Cardiff to ensure that we can go behind the curtain a little bit. Whereas the TV show, they land on a planet and they look and then they rush off and go over there. We can do things like give the player the opportunity to go left instead of right with the Doctor. And so, we work with them about how we can do things within the Doctor Who world that give players and fans bigger experiences.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in terms of the game itself with the Eternity Clock, we've got Daleks, we've got Cybermen, we've got Silurians, the Silence as well.
Yes.
So what was the, in terms of choosing them, what was the kind of thinking behind that? Was that something you said, right, these are who we want to be in it in terms of monsters?
Yeah, well, so interestingly, initially enough, the very first pitch actually had one different monster. But when we pitched this originally, the Silence hadn't been shown on TV. And so we sat down and we pitched us and they said, well, we have this new monster that's just about to be shown in, because the first part of Series 6 was just about to be shown. Could you incorporate that into the game? So we actually pulled one of the original monsters out and put the Silence in. And that had really great ramifications, because we had to work out how we integrated the whole aspect of them, about if you lose sight of them, you forget everything. And we actually think we've got a great mechanic of the way that weaves into the game, where you have to follow them around and keep them in sight. Otherwise, you get reset because you forget all about them. So we started off with just the goal of bringing some really classic Doctor Who monsters to life, replicating what's been done in the recent series. And then, as I say, the Cardiff and the brand team said, can you bring the Silence into the game as well?
Okay.
So we did.
You know the plans for the future. I guess the last question I'd have is, we've got these two games coming out. Well, the one game coming out, one on PlayStation 3, one on Vista. I mean, just not to take up too much time, were there any major pitfall differences between the two platforms? Is anyone going to want to buy, say, or download one more than the other?
No, there's not any major differences. I mean, the one fundamentally different feature is the Vita is single player only, whereas the PlayStation 3 has the two player co-op mode. And I think, in line with Sony's message about Vita, which is it's console quality gaming on the move, one of the unique features we're putting in Vita is what we call continuation play. So you save your game on the PlayStation. If you own both versions, you save your game on the PlayStation 3, you can then load that save game from the cloud on your Vita and continue to play it on the move, save it again, it saves to the cloud, you continue it back on at home on your PlayStation 3. So you don't need two separate play games. We do also have another unique Vita feature, which is we're using Nier, which is their GPS system. So there's a whole game about leaving Doctor Who medals in physical locations. So you geotag a location, and then people can actually come and collect them. So we're hoping the Doctor Who community will start tagging locations and swapping stuff.
That'd be very interesting.
There's a whole aspect, and that's unique to the Vita version, obviously, because you can't carry a PlayStation 3 around to do that. So I think, I'm obviously hoping people get both versions. They are the same game. I mean, the visual quality, I think, is amazing on Vita. It's really impressive.
Fascinating stuff. Exciting as well. A big thank you there to Mez Burditch. James, you're a man who's played Doctor Who games in the past. We've got the Eternity Clock there. We've got the Worlds in Time MMO, which is a browser-based game that's already out.
Yeah.
Now, for me, I'm looking forward to the Eternity Clock. I played World in Time. It doesn't do anything for me, personally speaking. I think an MMO is a good direction for Dota 2, but I'm not sure that particular game is the one. Mm. I'm looking forward to the Eternity Clock, as I say, but I will wait till it comes out on the PC. If you, and you know, you've been involved in developing games, mm-hmm. if it was down to you to develop or to offer a conception of, or a concept, beg your pardon, of a new Dota 2 game, where would you start? What would it be?
That's a good question, isn't it? And through the development I went through, I saw quite a few different ideas. It's a difficult one. I would say that the most important thing for me is the TARDIS. I think not the TARDIS has to be the be all and end all of it. I think there has to be, especially these days with so much more technology available, there has to be a certain amount of non-linear ability to use that TARDIS. Even if you have, say, five or six different zones in the game, the ability to be able to perhaps move the TARDIS between those zones. Mm-hmm. I think the TARDIS would be very important to me. Again, as I say, if we take out the whole concept of the BBC licensing, I think it would be quite nice to have a video game like Lucasfilm has been doing, which is based in the Doctor Who universe, which allows the character, the main person, to be someone like the Doctor, but not necessarily the Doctor. Maybe an nth Doctor, so they can customize their character, so he's not just the Doctor. He could be the gynecologist or whatever stupid name they want him to be, you know, and then they could perhaps even design him, because I mean, the one thing about the Doctor or Doctor Who as a theme is that it changes, and we have a whole different looks to the Doctor, so why not allow the character to become a bit more. I mean, maybe perhaps one of the ways to look at it is you look at, say, like the Final Fantasy games in Japan. And you have that sort of mixture of the RP, very slightly linear RPG approach mm-hmm. to games, where they are a little point and click. There is a certain amount of experience to be gained. The story still remains fairly linear, so it can be controlled within the game engine. And yet you can still have battles or perhaps in Doctor Who, chases and stealth. I mean, maybe this should be a more of a Metal Gear Solid approach to Doctor Who, and maybe there's a bit of that in this new game. I'm not sure from the screenshot. It's hard to say.
I think from the video that there does appear to be in the Eternity Clock some stealth moments.
Which seems wise. It seems a good step forward. I think those sort of elements would be quite popular. Maybe even, again, because graphics can be fairly customizable, you can adjust and customize, have your own sonic screwdriver. Perhaps even, you know, your TARDIS. Maybe there's a range of different models of TARDIS that you could have, you know, a classic look, a futuristic look, a police box, prism, whatever you want. I just think that that's the key that's missing here. The Doctor Who is very immersive because people want to be like the Doctor, and they want to imagine what it's like to be like the Doctor. And I think video games can offer that, and they haven't done that yet.
Okay. I've always thought that it would be good to have a World of Warcraft style or Star Wars, the Old Republic style, full MMORPG Doctor Who game, whereby you've got different races on different planets, and you can start off as a Cyberman or a Dalek. You can actually be a Dalek, Sontarans, even Time Lords, and you know, it might be a Time War related thing. But it would probably it would be massive, and it would go on for ages, and there'd be, you know, there'd be the full, you know, everything you get from an MMORPG, a full ongoing storyline that, you know, that is enhanced each time you reach a certain level. And I, like you know, you can be a Time Lord, so you have that opportunity to be like the Doctor, and you can get a time machine. Other than that, there's also the other alternative, which is again recalling the Star Wars, the Was it Battlefront, the top-down 3D isometric
Star Wars? Yeah,
battle games.
Yeah, Battlefront.
I think. You know, you've got all these warlike races in Doctor Who. Mm. You can have Time Lords and Daleks fighting and everything. I've seen on the web there've been a few attempts by fans to do things with Doctor Who unofficially. creating mods for other games, and they've been slapped down very early on by the BBC, which is very unfair, I think, given the, you know, other properties are much bigger have done it. I mean, this goes back a long time as well. There was a Doom mod, or a Doom 2 mod, I think, of Doctor Who, which basically replaced all the enemies with different Daleks and other Doctor Who monsters, which was a lot of fun to play. And I think when you're excluding the fans from being able to get involved with that, it does keep it away from the fans, and you know, you're cutting out the fan input as to how the games could be.
I mean, I think this is a problem which we've obviously seen very recently in America with the SOPA bill, where you've got the entertainment industry, which is still very, very keen to try and keep consumers as couch potatoes, where they are basically delivered a game or a TV show which they play strictly to those linear rules. But unfortunately, what the 21st century has done has opened up technology to show that people don't want to be couch potatoes. They want to be involved. They want to be active. They want to be creative. They want their brains to fire. And you get these worlds, you get these mods, you get these meshes, you get these builds, you get these online grids full of people creating stuff, be it Doctor Who, Battlestar Galactica. And I think I think soon enough, the industry is going to have to work out. And I think they're going to have to get very quick on this, because it's changing massively. And I think it's changing massively on so many fronts in America, even down to how television's working with Netflix and Hulu becoming so big now. And consumer demand to be able to not just share, but to choose what they want. The companies are going to have to, if they want to make money like the BBC does, they're going to have to start accepting that fans are going to want to create. And if you want to actually keep those fans in your pocket, you're going to have to a certain degree step back and sort of say, we will deliver you the opportunities to create and to have fun and to have a certain ability to mod, and but we'll do it on our terms, and that's the way forward. And to create things like an MMO or these sort of online experiences which allow these people to mod and to adjust their stuff, so you could have a world of an MMO of Doctor Who, but they could bring in their own meshes and stuff, and they'll be paying a fee, you know, an online fee to do that would cover the rights for them to. Because I've seen there's some fantastic forums of people who do some fantastic mesh and 3D work of Doctor Who in terms of sort of like police boxes and consoles and stuff, and allow them to actually get involved in something, but it stays within the control of the copyright owners. Otherwise, they lose out essentially, because they'll go and find it anyway. I mean, you can knock down as many YouTube videos as you like, but they'll only go somewhere else. People are going to seriously. And I just think the industry's still slow to catch up with this and actually take hold of it. And music industry's getting there a lot more, obviously, in the likes of iTunes and as I say, Netflix has learnt. You know, you think 10 years ago with Napster and the fury of Napster sharing stuff online, you look at Netflix now, which makes Napster look a bit crap. You know, for a few quid a month, you can take down, you can sort of watch entire seasons. And so it's ways of finding to bring sharing and the ability for consumers to have rights and ability to do stuff, but still keep it within the license holders thing. So yeah, I think something like an MMO, and I think the future of MMOs will become more creative as the technology allows them to. So yeah, I think that Doctor Who is about creativity, and I think it's inspired so much creativity, and they should accept that. And I wonder whether what we're seeing with this latest game is going to be a dying breed as BBC and video games start realizing they can take these concepts a lot further.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good place to finish on.
What would you like to see in a video game, actually? I've talked far too much. Well, just before we go.
Who, me?
Yeah. I mean, you said an MMO. I like the idea of the Battlefront. I think that's a great idea, because there's so many bits of Doctor Who, like the Daleks. I mean, the Daleks are as big as Doctor Who, especially in the UK.
Yeah. Well, a Civilization-style Doctor Who game would be fantastic, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What do you think, Brian?
It's typical. You see, it's... I suppose he doesn't need it because he goes running around in his David Tennant suit and his screwdriver.
That's it, isn't it? Yeah.
I see. Want to sit there. How is he going to impress the girls in front of a TV monitor? But I mean, you're going to buy this new game? I mean, I'm quite tempted. I'm not sure because
I think I'll certainly be seriously considering it. It depends on what else I'm playing at the time. Because I'm having to play with Terror at the moment. That's not Brian. That's a new game.
Crikey, this is
new MMORPG that's coming out. It really does depend on time. I do really like the look of it. If I had a PS Vita, which is the new portable PlayStation, it would be more likely that I'd get the game because I'd have more chance of playing it probably. In times away from the computer.
They do take a lot of time, don't they?
They do.
But as I say, I'll be very interested to see whether the things will change the next few years and we won't get these. Because I do find these sort of games where they are very static, they do become become quite frustrating in a lot of ways.
Well, it's not that they don't become, they're not replayable.
Yeah.
Either. There's no replayable. The Doctor Adventure games, as I said earlier on, they're free. So there's that great quality about them. They're well designed as well. Mm-hmm. They're slightly limited in what you can actually do in the game. But they're enjoyable enough to play, but you don't necessarily want to replay them once you've completed.
Well, this is the problem, and it goes
and
back...
And that's the best games out there are the ones that you want to play again and again, whether or not they're strategy games where you have the opportunity to take things in a different direction, or they're, you know, big overarching FPS games like Half-Life 2, which, I mean, I still play Half-Life 2, and it's nearly 10 years old.
But those FPSs have really dominated the industry in the last 10 years, which is the real problem, because I agree that if you think of the point and click of Monkey Island and you think of what you could do with that now with the technology, if the market and the investment was there to do it, you could have something really quite fantastic, which doesn't even need you to do a sonic screwdriver puzzle or to shoot things or dodge things, and which isn't always about Doctor Who. I do think that it will be. I really do believe quite fervently they've got to get away from doing stories in video games of Doctor Who. I don't think they're ever as good because you can't have the same pacing. I think it's hard to get the scripting, to get the dialogue right. And quite honestly, as you say, I think people who want to watch Doctor Who will watch it. You want to play a video game. You want something which you can immerse yourself in, not watch. And as soon as you're having cutscenes that are just defining the game and then doing, you know, a bit of whatever the game interactability is, and then you're going back to a cutscene.
Yeah.
That's not really what video games, I think, are going to be about. It's going to be about you being that person. And so it'll be very interesting. But good luck on this new game to the designers.
Absolutely, yeah.
A lot of work in it by the looks of it, and that's a good start.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's Castaris podcast with AK. We'll obviously be talking about something completely different next time. So goodbye from Brian. Goodbye from James.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me.